and welcome to Stories from the Ridge, Macaulay's podcast series. I'm Lee Burns, head of school at Macaulay. Today's podcast is a powerful, firsthand account of one of the most horrific and impactful events in American history, the lynching of Emmett Till. That tragic event occurred in 1955 in Mississippi, and many historians refer to it as the beginning of the modern civil rights struggle in the United States. On March 13th, the Reverend Wheeler Parker, who's now 84 years old, spent a day at Macaulay, speaking to the upper school students in chapel, hosting a student Q&A session at lunchtime, and talking to a couple of classes. He also stopped by the podcast studio to record this powerful podcast. I suspect that most of you know the story of Emmett Till, how as a 14-year-old in 1955, he traveled from Chicago to visit his grandfather in rural Mississippi, innocently whistled at a white woman on the street of a small Mississippi town, was subsequently abducted at gunpoint, dragged in the middle of the night from his grandfather's house, was beaten, shot, and his body thrown in the Tallahatchie River. It was a murder that, as one writer said, shook the conscience of the world. Reverend Parker, or as he's more commonly known, Elder Parker, was, at 16, Emmett's older cousin and one of his closest friends. He is the last living member of the family who witnessed the kidnapping. Last year, we produced a podcast featuring Jason Walker, Macaulay class of 1991, and now a member of our Board of Trustees, who is joined by student Jonathan Manta, class of 2023, and history teacher Dr. Duke Ritchie, class of 1986. They shared the story of how Jason married into the Till family. His wife's father was a cousin of Emmett Till and of Elder Parker, and how Jason connected Elder Parker with Jonathan Manta, who subsequently wrote a paper on the topic that won a top state history prize. If you haven't listened to that podcast, I encourage you to do so. A link is in the text to this podcast. That first podcast created a lot of buzz and discussion on campus and among alumni, and soon we knew that we needed to get Elder Parker to campus. So this new episode features Jason Walker and Elder Parker on campus. In the second half, they are joined by history teacher Casey Cook, class of 2013, and student Max Hood, who during tea term last January visited the site in Mississippi of Emmett Till's lynching. Let's join them in the studio for this powerful podcast.
Good morning. My name is Jason Walker. I am a proud alum of the Macaulay School. I graduated from here in 1992. I will say this, and I did a podcast, here at Macaulay, last year with a student by the name of Jonathan Manta, who did a research project on Emmett Till. And I stated at that time, one of the joys of my life was being, was getting married to my wife and married into this family. And I'm pleased to say that the pastor that married us was, Elder Wheeler Parker. So that was some almost 28 years ago now. Wow. Yeah, it's been a while.
That's a feather in my cap. Most of them don't seem to last.
Well, I will take that feather and say that it is certainly, you prayed a blessing over us on that day, and it has carried us some 28 years now, four kids later. And still can't certainly thank you enough for, the blessing that you've been in our lives and the blessing that you are in the lives of so many others. You did a research project with the student Jonathan Manta talking about Emmett Till, and that has really sparked a lot of interest. And you've been pretty busy,
very busy.
So if you wouldn't mind, I don't know who all will listen to this podcast. Hopefully many, many people will listen to it. But if you wouldn't mind kind of sharing with us a little bit about you and, your 84 years and what that journey has been like for you.
Be 85 Monday.
I keep selling you short. Yeah, 85 years.
When you get this old, you don't want to cut short anything.
Okay. Fair enough.
Trying to get to 90. My life, I was born in Slaughter, Mississippi.
Okay.
1939. And of course, we moved to money about 5 or 6 years later, along with my grandfather, Mose Wright. Mm-hmm. And we left there in January 1st, 1947, in the city of New Orleans. My mother got on the train with 5 kids going to the promised land. We're part of the Great Migration, nothing like it. And we arrived in Chicago there January 1st, 1947, 77 years ago.
Okay.
Last past January. Of course, I moved next door to Emmett Till, Emmett Till's mother, grandmother, and my grandmother's sisters.
Okay.
And we moved to this small town of Argo. Argo is known for the Argo starch, Mazola oil, Cairo syrup, and all those things. But its technical name is Summit.
Okay.
So Summit annexed Argo, unbeknown to them, one day. And they woke up one morning, and they're part of Summit. So I always say I'm from Argo. It's hard for me to say Summit because I'm from the Argo section. Now, the whole town is a half mile wide, mile and a half long. So how can you argue with that?
Right. That's fair. Now, we were talking this morning about, the going from Chicago down to Mississippi. And now, when I first, heard of the Emmett Till story, I thought it was just like, a bunch of young guys going to visit their grandfather for the summer to have fun. But now you tell it. It was not a fun trip. It was a work trip,
without a doubt. I mean, we went in droves. People who know the history of they sent children back in droves to be with them. It was fun too because you meet with your relatives and some relatives, like my uncles. I went to see 3 uncles who were younger than I. So, but when you got there, we got there Sunday. It's Monday morning. We're in the cotton field, full fledged picking cotton. I mean, all day long. It was that was a must. Without a doubt, it was part of life there. Of course, Emmett didn't do too well in the cotton field, a little hot.
So Emmett didn't do too well in the cotton field, but you guys would, is that your whole time there, picking cotton, just in the mornings and
all day? It's a routine. I mean, you don't go to the South to change the mores or change what's going on. You just go there and join in and become a part of it.
Yeah.
And that was the beginning of cotton picking season. And that lasted until like August. Sometimes we think of the South of picking cotton, we think it was all year. No, it's last of August to about maybe November.
Okay.
It's over with.
Okay.
You didn't pick cotton all year round.
Now, what did that do for your work ethic as a young man?
I left Mississippi with the greatest work ethics you ever want to have. Because we were taught and you were train, and before you knew it, your work ethic said, I'll work the next guy.
Mm-hmm.
And when you worked, did well, they said, man, he's going to make somebody a great husband one day, and your little chest go out, and you want to do everything grown folk do. So,
right.
So work ethics in the South was tremendous. My daddy came to Chicago, and we worked from sun to sun.
Okay.
So when the sun come up, you work, and you stay there until the end. So my daddy came to Chicago, and we started working at the Argo starch plant. And out in Argo, Illinois, Summit, Illinois. And the whistle blew at 4 o'clock. And my dad said, what's that for? They said, it's time to quit work. They said, my dad walked out, looked up, said, that sign awful high to be quitting. So it's too much free time.
Right.
So he started to go back home. Really, he said if he didn't work hard, he'd get sick.
Right.
And he wanted us with that same attitude.
Right.
My brother with me, one day he said something to the tune like, I don't want to work, I thought he cursed my dad out in there. So we had to go see what's going on. I got a boy here saying he don't want to work.
Right.
I have to eliminate him. He's always been, even now he's conservative. He worked, but he's conservative.
Right. He conserved his energy.
Yeah.
Right. Now, so if you wouldn't mind, what do you remember most from that trip down to Mississippi in 1955? Prior to that trip, did you get a sense that that the Mississippi was anything different? Did Emmett know that how serious things were in Mississippi? I don't know if it was his first time or what have you.
It was not a planned trip. My grandfather came to Chicago to bury one of his former parishioners.
Okay.
So it was not a planned trip. It was an impromptu trip. And they said, well, I had a business by now. I went in business at 6th grade, and I'm serious in business. And so I want to go some kind of way. I'm going back with him. Emmett didn't have any siblings. He didn't have a lot of relatives around. So when his mother took him someplace, out of the six of us, I fit best with him. Mm-hmm. So she took me along. So we came like that. And he found out that I'm going to Mississippi. And he just wouldn't have it. They did not want Emmett to go to Mississippi. Because they knew the ways of the South. When you in the South, you're informed very, you learn very early the mores of the South. I mean, as soon as you could comprehend, especially young boys, to stay alive. And we got along well because we complied with the rules of the mores of the South.
Now, was Emmett, was he born in Chicago?
He born in Chicago.
Okay. So he didn't grow up in the South like you did?
Had no idea. So okay. we said, can you let that boy go South? Because people got killed for reckless eyeball. I mean, you had no protection when something happened, when something got out of line. You had no protection. And usually when they sent you South, they put you in the hand of an adult, grandmother or somebody. So you're with someone all the time to help you stay the course. And a lot of kids from the North, they didn't know, so they had to be with someone. But when Emmett went, he was with me and my uncle, who's my same age. And my grandfather's an old man.
Is that Uncle Simi?
Robert. Maurice.
Maurice, okay.
Maurice. Simi's a couple of years younger.
Okay.
I was 16. Emmett was 14. And I had another uncle that was there. He was 14.
Okay.
Another uncle who was 16. So we all around the same age. And we had use of a car. And so anyway, back to sending him South, they didn't want him to go. I don't know how, what happened today, how he talked him into letting him go. Because the word was he's not going South. And what they were afraid of, what could happen, what did happen is what they were afraid could happen.
Okay.
And we knew that. We knew very well. They had no trouble with me because I left when I was my formative years, I'm about 8 years old. I know the ways of the South. You're well indoctrinated to stay alive, stay safe. You're well indoctrinated. Mm-hmm. And you don't even kids come from the South Line, they're a little different. Yes, sir. They're more manageable and everything, and we well entrenched.
Yeah.
So they didn't have any problem with me going, but him they was concerned about.
Yeah. So once everything transpired, you know, down in Mississippi, what was the aftermath like? Yeah, you know, once you know Emmett was taken and things. What was it like? You know, I would say that next morning. Realizing that he was gone, and had been kidnapped and been taken.
It was horrible. I mean, 2:30 in the morning they came, Sunday morning. It was a horrible scene. It was pure hell and just unbelievable what was happening when I heard him talking. I said, "We're getting ready to die." I knew what he had.
Now you thought everybody was going to die.
Oh yeah. I'm praying and. We were very religious people, and we were always aware if we're in good standings with God or not. I said, I'm 16. I've been gambling and doing everything else. I'm not in good standing. I said, God, I'm getting ready to die, and my relationship with you is not right. And I don't want to die. I'm 16. So I started praying. I prayed and shaking like a leaf on a tree. I said, God, if you just let me live.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing when death is imminent. You think about every little thing you've done, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, but it just come all back. And I said, God, I said, you got to let me live. And I'm praying as dark as 1,000 midnights. You could not see your hand before your face. When the moon didn't shine, you could not. Your hand could be right here. You can't see it. 2:30 in the morning. And I heard him talk. So you got two boys here from Chicago. We want to talk to the one that did the talk at the store. They said nothing about the whistle. That's what got us out of there. So we want to talk to him. We lived in a large former landowner's home. Screening porch, bedrooms right off the screening porch. Four bedrooms back to back, no hallways.
Mm-hmm.
Go right to the bedrooms. My grandfather was in one to the left, and I was one to the right. He didn't know where Emmett was. That's about about four boys there, plus Emmett and I. So he started coming along. We hear him coming, and the footsteps are coming, stretching your eyes, and they come in with no lights on anywhere. They come in with a flashlight in one hand and a pistol in the other. I'm shaking like a leaf on a tree, and I close my eyes to be shot. And they didn't shoot me because I knew where I was. I knew I was in the South, and I knew I couldn't call my grandfather or anyone from help. So you call, you call on God, you talk to God. Open my eyes and they're passing by me. I didn't get shot, I'm still alive. They went next room, Amy wasn't there. They went to the third room and they found Amy in the bed with my Uncle Simeon, who's 12. Also, there's an extra bed in the room. My Uncle Robert was in that room, he was 14. He's same age as him, 14. And he wanted to put, I think they told me to put his shoes on, he wouldn't put his socks on. He had no idea who was talking to him. He's saying, yeah, I know. And it's just pure hell over there. Just, you know.
So he still didn't.
He had no idea.
No idea what was happening.
He had no idea where he was at. He couldn't, you know. His mother said she gave him a crash course, but you can't take a crash course and go south in those days. If you didn't live during that time, you had no idea what it was like. I mean, because it was a certain way, and people who lived there, they complied, they played the rules, so. But he had no idea who he's talking to, what he's dealing with, because I wouldn't have gone.
Really?
No. I'm going to die right there. I'm going to die anyway, you know.
Right.
Yeah, come. That's the first thing I said, we finna die. When I heard him talk, I said, we finna die. Heard the stories of people who got killed. My dad had to sleep with his gun overnight. My dad's one of the best men you could come across.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy later said, Wheeler's a good man, but he didn't know he's coming. He wasn't taking a beating. So he boarded up his door, got his shot, stopped by and got his shotgun on the way home. They didn't come. My uncle's telling me about people home, left his house and home right down the street. Anyway, we don't tell those stories. So black boys and girls who come up, they don't know how far we've come because we don't tell the stories.
Mm-hmm.
They know racism is alive and exists. I said, well, we come from a long way, man. We made a lot of progress.
Yeah.
We got a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
But they don't know nothing about the culture. We don't tell them the story.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of atmosphere you're facing when you hear him coming for you. You had no protection. You couldn't call anyone for help. Not a soul, police. I mean, because they're going to be with them. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like the three civil rights workers. Police help get them killed, you know.
Right.
And that's you knew that from the South. So that's what we're facing. We finally got him out. And that's the last time we saw him alive.
Wow.
He had no idea. I wasn't going nowhere.
Now, how after that night, how long was it before you and the others that came down from Chicago went back? Did you go back immediately, or were you waiting to see if Emmett came home?
After they left that morning,
yes, sir.
I left as soon as I could. I called my call. I got some touch with my uncle because you didn't have phones then. And I remember him coming over and his gun in his hand. And he looked at me like, what have you got us into, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because it was far reaching. It wasn't just, think, are they coming back? I got up, I put my shoes on, so they're coming back. I'm heading for the woods.
Okay.
That's what you did, you tried to survive. Because whatever, you don't know who you're dealing with. Everybody that you deal with is different.
Right.
So I got up and got ready to hit the woods if they came back. Daylight finally came. During that time, my uncle's in bed with me. He never woke up. We didn't talk. We just, everybody stayed put in the room they were in. Daylight finally came and my uncle came and got my grandfather's car and put his pistol in the glove compartment. And he took me to Duck Hill, Mississippi. And that was Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Monday, I was out of there. I caught the first thing smoking coming back to Illinois.
Okay.
Yeah, so. And Emmett, we never saw him again.
And how long was it before his body was recovered?
That was on Sunday morning. They found his body. Shouldn't have never found his body. Normally, they don't find their bodies.
Okay.
There's no qualm about killing blacks. Just don't want bodies laying everywhere.
Okay.
That's the big thing. So they would throw you in the river, and they weighted his body down. Should have never been seen again. But as he went downstream, his body snagged and his foot was bobbing up and down. And the young white boy saw it and reported and they pulled him out.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a plus in itself. And of course, he was naked and beaten and shot in the head. And of course they said, this is not, when they had the trial, kind of going forward and coming back, they said, this is not Emmett Till. Because Emmett was Irish related, and all of us got a lot of European in us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He had the gray eyes and everything. So this is an old white man you guys have dug up trying to embarrass Mississippi. You all know that's not him. That's how they won the case, the trial. Of course, we exhumed the body about 50 years later to do DNA, mitochondrial DNA, and some of my family didn't want to do it. Man, we know that's Emmett. We know that's Bobo. Right. Bobo. What's wrong with y'all? Y'all tripping? But anyway, it was him. And, so it was Wednesday they found him.
Okay.
Wednesday. So it took him Sunday morning. Wednesday they found his body.
Yeah.
And they had a trial. That was progress. They got a trial.
Now, your grandfather, my understanding, was he the first black man to, speak at a to testify against against white men and still live?
Yeah. I mean, he went home one night from court. Emmett Till's mother, show you how bad things were. She thought that she could be killed in the courtroom, not outside the courtroom.
Oh, in the courtroom?
In the courtroom.
Okay.
Because we knew you had no protection. The federal government had no protection. I mean, it's hard to believe the way it was.
Yeah.
But that was the truth. She thought she could be killed going in and out of the courtroom every day.
Now, the Emmett Till tragedy is often regarded as kind of the spark of the what we know to be the civil rights movement. Mm-hmm. In your opinion, was it Emmett's death that was the spark, or was it the fact that the two men got acquitted and did not suffer any consequences was the spark?
I never thought about it being a spark.
Okay.
We just knew we lost him. And the attitude for 30 years of America was of such, and among blacks, we never talked about it. Mm. Something you didn't talk about. Because the system was saying he got what he deserved. I was speaking at my local school. I'm telling the story. He said, why are we talking about Emmett Till? He misbehaved.
Mm-hmm.
He got what he deserved. And black people can talk to them and say, look, my grandfather would not have let them take that boy. It wouldn't have happened. So it was a hush-hush as a whole for 30 years until a guy named Rich Samuels, NBC, Channel 5 in Chicago, did a documentary. Things began to change. Where we are today, I never thought in a lifetime it could come to what it is.
Yeah.
And it's getting the attention that it gets.
Yeah.
Streets named after him, stuff like that, because he misbehaved, as far as they're concerned. He violated the Southern Maori. He whistled. He did whistle. And sometimes people still won't say, well, he did something. I could feel, and I get in a certain atmosphere, in certain settings,
Mm-hmm.
You still have to kind of deal with that because it made America look bad.
Yeah.
It happened all the time, but this went all over the world. The white press started carrying it. The black papers always carried it. But here you're making America look bad, so we got to kind of justify.
Yeah.
So they had to portray him in a very bad light, like he got what he deserved.
Yeah, almost to justify. Yeah,
exactly, and that's what we had to deal with.
And so now
especially that Look magazine piece, oh my goodness.
Mm.
I found, the guy gave me something the other day from the guy that did the Look magazine. I said, what? He's saying he interviewed me? I never saw that guy a day in my life.
Now
so I'm still dealing with the crazy. So I get letters, they should have killed you too, That
kind of really?
Stuff. Even now, it's stupid stuff.
Wow. Now, so you talk about how far we've come, and we still, we've come a long way, and we still got a long way to go.
Exactly.
I know that you have worked with the president's office on the Emmett Till anti-lynching bill. How did that come about?
We were invited there, and I think it's, I don't want to give the credit to the wrong people, Senator. Is there a guy named Booker, black guy named
Booker?
Mm-hmm. Booker and someone else, they decided to name it after Emmett Till.
Okay.
So we were invited there and with the president and we're talking, the president going to tell me about Satchel Paige. I tell him a Satchel Paige story. So we had a nice little conversation.
Well, because y'all are about the same age.
Yeah, exactly. Same age, right? We've come from the same era.
Yeah.
And he's been there so long, he's relaxing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, since y'all the same age, I mean, you could run for president too,
Yeah. If they listen, I ran a barbershop, so the president wants a solution, come to the barbershop. Got the solutions. So Ida B. Wells' great-granddaughter was there.
Mm.
And you need to listen to that speech at the anti-lynching signing, Emmett Till, named it after Emmett.
Yeah.
And she said, my great-grandmother was here 100 years ago. And it took 100 years, 200 times, to get an anti-lynching bill signed. Anti-lynching.
Right.
I wanted to get an attitude, but God spoke to me. It's yet an ear to hear. It says, and he let me know that the wheels of justice grind, but they grind slow.
Mm.
Change comes about in America, but it's slow.
It's slow, yeah.
If you're in a hurry, you're in the wrong place.
Yeah.
So I appreciate and thank God that we, and there's always some whites, whenever we make progress, there's always some whites that had the fire in their belly mm-hmm. to stand up to get it done. Yeah. I had to tell black people that. Even when it came to getting the prosecutor for Emmett Till's case, if you look at Mr. Smith, the prosecutor, the fear that he had in his eyes to be a prosecutor. I talked to his son now. His dad had the same threats that black people had. He had to have state police at his house every night. And he was his life was threatened, but he had the fire in his belly to stand up.
Yeah.
And we had people all along the way to stand up, be a prosecutor, do whatever they need to do to help us get to where we are. It's God's sin. And we
absolutely.
Should have, yeah. And we need to know that, though. Sometimes we think everybody's bad, everybody's not bad.
Right.
But it was the first time that we know of they're having a trial for a white man doing something to a black man. It was almost, it was incredible. It was incredible. My grandfather went home from the trial one night, couldn't sleep. So he went, slept in the cemetery all night. Went home the next day, said, white man was around your house all night last night. He could have been killed, nothing done.
Mm-hmm.
But he just, right on the motor, he just come up missing, you know.
Yeah.
There's not going to be an FBI investigation, nothing like that.
Mm-hmm.
So progress had been made that they had a trial.
Yeah.
And we appreciate that. So,
yeah.
With the justice grind, they grind slow.
They do. They do. Now, before we take a quick break, I will ask, so how does that, seeing this, the anti-lynching bill being named after Emmett come to pass, is there any sense of, you know, I'll say validation for you? Any, how does that feel for you after you've fought for so long to, you know, to make sure that Emmett's name is remembered and now to see it come all this way?
We feel good. Remember 30 years we dealt with. Who I had to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And when I told my story 30 years later, they said, Wheeler, allege, are you crazy? I'm a witness.
Right.
And it's still almost like that.
So I will say this. The one thing that I have always, in our 28 years of knowing each other, one thing I've always appreciated about you is that you always come from a place of love and a place of hope.
Got to.
And despite all the things that you have seen and all the things you've been through, how are you not bitter, but instead have love?
And we were trained to be that way
mm-hmm.
because we were very strong religious family. My grandfather was a preacher, and Emmett Till's mother, I listened to her reconciliation speech. The church that I pastor started at her mother's house.
Mm.
And we taught love from zero, not to love the races, but each other. Your foes are going to be them of your own household, in your own environment, not across the race. So
right.
we taught you how to love everybody in order to go to heaven. And they put it in us and to forgive. Forgive is no problem because that's what we taught you how to do. It's like innate, it's part of your life, you know?
Right.
If you don't forgive, God won't forgive you.
Right.
If God don't forgive you, you're going to hell.
Right.
So it was well put in us.
Right, right.
So when it came to doing it with the help of God, you can do it.
Yeah.
You can do it.
Yeah, with the help of God, we can do anything, right? Yeah,
exactly.
So with that, we'll take a break and we'll come right back.
All right.
We'll return to this powerful discussion with Jason Walker and Elder Wheeler Parker in just a minute. I'm Lee Burns, head of school at Macaulay. When Elder Parker visited campus on March 13th, he did so as a guest speaker as part of the Mandela Fellow Endowed Fund. That fund was established by Macaulay alumnus in 2014 to honor Nelson Mandela. Its purpose has been to enhance students' understanding of what it means to be an agent of hope, reconciliation, and social justice, and to reinforce the school's ideal of preparing young men to make a positive difference in their world. Past Mandela fellows to visit campus have included the late Congressman John Lewis and civil rights leader and ambassador Andrew Young. I want to personally, and on behalf of everyone at Macaulay, thank those who have supported the Mandela Fellows Fund. Elder Parker's visit to campus certainly highlights the importance of that fund. In the first part of this podcast, Elder Parker talks about the impact a Look magazine article had on him and his family. He will refer to that again in the second part we are about to hear. That article was published in 1956, a year after the murder, and several months after the two killers were tried and found innocent. They then, with immunity from further prosecution, sold their story to Look magazine for $4,000 and confessed to the kidnapping and killing. One of the many things that impresses me about this podcast is how Elder Parker does not let horrible events and the bragging by the killers in Look magazine turn him into someone filled with hate and bitterness. He talks eloquently about that. And his love of God and his fellow man is a wonderfully uplifting element to a story that has so many dark sides. I encourage you to share this podcast with your family and friends. The more we hear Elder Parker's message, the better we are as a nation. Now let's return to the podcast.
All right. So welcome back. We're joined by Max. And Max, what's your last name again?
Hood.
Max Hood. And so Max is a freshman here at Macaulay, enjoying his first year. And also joined by Casey Cook.
Yes, sir.
And so, Casey, not only are you a teacher here at Macaulay, but you're also an alum as well yourself, right?
That's right. Class of 2013, day student.
So, I may not be as far along my age as Elder Parker here, when I hear class of 2013 and Max, you're the class of what?
2027.
Yes, sir. Yeah. So you guys are making me feel old. So I know that you two, I think took a trip down to Money, Mississippi. Was that during T-term?
That's right. First week in January, we took about 10 to 12 students, and we went from Atlanta to Birmingham, Montgomery, and then eventually to the Mississippi Delta in Money, Mississippi.
Now, what was so Max? I'm sure that the students, you guys had to sign up for these trips.
Yes, sir.
And so, why did you choose to go on this trip for your T-term?
I chose to choose this trip because I feel like in today's world, we don't learn enough about these things. And I felt like it's a very important thing to know because it's our history. It's the way things used to be, but they're no longer like that. And I feel like it was a really good thing to know about. And to me, it was really important because I got to learn more about what I did not already know. And there's more to it than you think. But whenever you actually get to experience and be in the situations and like get to see where everything went on, you learn more about it.
Yeah. Now the things that you learned on that trip, were those things that you learned, in school?
Yes, sir. And no, sir.
Okay.
So we learned a lot that we had already knew, but then obviously there was a lot of things we did not know.
Yeah.
And like I said previously, just being in the area and getting to see things for yourself opens up a whole new world than the things you think you know that you don't actually know.
Yeah. Now, Casey, what was the premise of the whole trip? I mean, so you guys hit some really hot spots.
Right.
Where all did you go? And then what was it that you were hoping that the students would take away from the trip?
Right. So we really tried to mirror kind of like a Freedom Rider-esque trip. In the first week, we really were just in the classroom educating the kids, showing them documentaries, showing them films, letting them read different materials about various times, not just the civil rights movement, not just the 40s, not just the 50s, but just in total. And so the first week, it was much more educational in the classroom. And then the second week, it was all travel. And we really wanted the chance for kids to get the hands-on experience that they might not get some other time in the year.
Right.
And so I think that was really beneficial for them to be on the roads that some of these people traveled to walk the same paths that they walked. And it was really powerful.
Yeah. Now, what about for you, though? You talk about the students, but how was that trip impactful for you?
For me, it was super impactful and super personal. just as a black man walking into Money, Mississippi, and seeing where this took place, looking at the river where Emmett Till's body was found. It almost just sent chills down my spine because even though it was so long ago, it felt really close to me. And it felt like this wasn't necessarily too long ago.
Right.
So it was it was really personalized to me in that sense.
Yeah, what I think a lot of people, I think what we lose sight of is we look at things that happened during the civil rights era or even before as being a long time ago, but not realizing that we're not that far removed. As Elder Parker sitting here in between us, I mean, you have a firsthand account of something that happened in 1955, just showing that, we've made some progress, but we're not that far removed. And so there's still more work to be done.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, so questions, you got any questions or thoughts for Elder Parker having been to Money, Mississippi?
Yeah, Elder Parker, I just had really one question for you. And have you been back to Mississippi since the incident? And if so, how did you feel going back?
It was 10 years before I went back. And I still am cautious of where I go and who I deal with because the laws make people behave, but it doesn't legislate the heart. So anything can happen, believe me. So I do go back, but it was a long time before I went back. Long time. It was 10 years before I went back.
Something that struck me was just the amount of black people in these states, like Mississippi, like Alabama, like Georgia, but there's such little political power, and they have such little political representation. Mm-hmm. And is that something you saw when you were growing up?
It was no political... There was no political power or representation. What you depend on when I was growing up is a powerful landlord, land owner. We were farmers, and we were, I can't think of the proper name. We worked the land, and we shared the proceeds from the land.
Sharecroppers?
Sharecroppers, exactly. Thank you very much. That's what we grew up with. And at the end of the year, during the year, you went to the commissary or he had the store and you got things. You didn't keep records. And they were, when it come to settle up the amount of money you made, my uncle went to sell a piece of Tellman. And they read the list, you got this and got that. He said, well, sir, I didn't get that water. He said, but it's on the record. He said, but he said it again.
Mm-hmm.
Sir, I didn't get that. He said, my daughter keeps the records. She don't make mistakes. Now, if he defied and called that man's daughter a liar, he'd get killed right there.
Right.
Nothing done about it.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, you talk too much, you need your tongue cut out. That's the same uncle that helped me to get out of Mississippi. He had 13 kids.
Mm.
The day he left, I left. Every morning, he sit on his porch with his shotguns, slept up there all night, every night, until he got out of there, because he knew something I didn't like. And he went to my other uncle's house, said, did you have that boy that was in Emmett Till here? He said, I don't know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
it's just stuff that you, revenge you had to pay because it could be done, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's kind of, I don't know if I answered your question.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Hey, so Max, having taken that trip, what are the takeaways that you have from that trip?
It's just, it was a very big learning experience. As I said earlier, just to kind of touch on what Mr. Cook said, being in the spots that these actions happened and the footsteps that others took, it's powerful because you don't really think about it until you're there. And then it's like, well, I'm here. This is where it happened. It's right. real. This is no longer just... I know it's you're here. This is real life.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that was a great thing to get to endure because, like I said before, here you get to learn about things, but when you're actually there in the footsteps, it's a whole nother experience.
Yeah.
And that was actually the name of our T-term, was the footsteps of freedom. And so, mm-hmm. like I said, we really wanted the students to follow those footsteps.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a fantastic experience for each of the students. And kudos to you, Casey, and for all the other administrators that helped put that together, because the more that we can give the students and ourselves, really, I'll say experiential learning and being able to have hands on and see what happened and walk those same footsteps, the more it ingrains it in that what we see from a textbook, the more it ingrains it in us. And we can kind of take it from there. So Elder Parker, I'll ask this question. How was it, meeting the president and doing, going into the Oval Office, and that whole experience?
Well, at 84, you're pretty sober. You don't get excited about a lot. Okay. And your whole value of life change, and you have great respect.
Yeah.
So it was great. And sometimes I had to stop and think, so this is really history being made. And then I'm thinking, I always go back, but the price that he paid.
Mm-hmm.
We appreciate the Till Bill, two of them, which gives $1 million a year to pursue civil rights cases named after Emmett Till. And now it's in perpetuity. It goes on forever now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We think about that and we appreciate that. And the anti-lynching bill named after him, streets named, this named after him. So he didn't die in vain, but you think about the suffering. You always go back to how you hear the guy talk about how he was screaming, being beaten, shot,
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of takes the enjoyment out of enjoying the good that came out of it.
Yeah.
But if I could tell him, I say, Emmett, well, you didn't die in vain. And I believe I went to the funeral. I had no remorse, no sorrow, because we believe that if you accept Christ in life, we can see each other again.
Yeah.
So I go back and I look at that, but that Look magazine article still resonates with me.
Yeah.
And it just, but you can't have an animosity, ill will, or hate. You can't do that. You got to go forward. You can't let that stuff stay with you.
Right.
You got to take it and put it in a compartment.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't, it's going to compartmentalize you.
Right.
And you're going to be messed up.
Yeah, it'll consume you, right?
Exactly.
Is there, as we talk to the, students here today, as we talk to Max, is there anything, any words of advice, words of wisdom that you would have for the students, as they go forward? Because, they are the leaders of tomorrow.
I always like to end with, and I think about Mamie Till's reconciliation speech. She says, like, those people do not exist. They can't control my life.
Mm-hmm.
I feel sorry for them. I have a life to live. And she took a lemon and she made lemonade. You can't harbor hate or will or anything like that, because most of your problem is going to be in your own house. Sometimes I always use the illustration. How would you like to wake up in the morning and say, I hate everybody in the house, hate my mama, hate my dad, hate myself, mm-hmm. just hate. And nobody think that hate is a good idea. So I say, if I say Spanish, you got a preconceived idea. If I say Irish, you got a preconceived idea. So when you see this color, you got a preconceived idea.
Mm-hmm.
We live in a melting pot. How do you handle it? How you compartmentalize? Where are you placing those things in life? So you can't afford the luxury of hate. That's why I try to get people to go forth and start with your own home.
Yeah.
Our divorce rate, first time divorce rate, 55%. Next, get married again, second time, 7%. Get married the third time, hey, I got to be this great. And you got 90% divorce rate. Somebody's not handling it right. So let's go back and look at things and let's enjoy life. We're only here for a short time. Make the best of it. Don't hate. And I said that at my school once. I said, don't hate. And the little girl said, appreciate. So I have a routine saying, don't hate, appreciate, don't hate, appreciate.
So Casey, let me ask you this. So having, taken that trip, and walking those streets and walking in the footsteps, of history, what does that do for you? What changes for you? Is there any sort of resolve for you to say, okay, as I go forward, I'm going to do this differently or think about this or that?
Yeah, I think it just brings me a sense of pride and duty. To teach these things and really bring light to them. Because as Reverend said earlier, there's a lot of people who are trying to hide that. And there's a lot of people who are trying to run away from that. And so I think it's my obligation and my job as an educator to shed light on those things and expose students to the truth.
Yeah. And Max, what about you? So you got 3 more years here on the Ridge and then a lifetime after that, and more than likely a lifetime of leadership and things. But what will you take from, this T-term trip and how, what does that do for you as you move forward?
I mean, as I grow up, I think it's a great thing to know. It's a great thing to be able to go back and teach about, to teach the people that are going to come and one day be leading just like I will be at some point. It's a great thing to be able to teach my kids about one day, to teach my friends about, everyone. I think it's something you've got to know and you've got to understand, because as crazy as it sounds, it did one time happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very real. It's realistic. It's, even though it's not ideal and it's not something you ever want to imagine, unfortunately, it did indeed happen, and the world's got to know about it, and the more to know about it, the better, because it happened, like I said, and it's a very important thing to know about.
Yeah, and I'll say this. I mean, it's important for us to not hide from our history. I think, you know, all too often when we try to forget the things of the past, all we end up doing is winding up repeating those things in some form or fashion. So we want to acknowledge our history. And we all have to take stock within ourselves to say, what are we going to do? How are we going to be part of that change? Now, for many of us, we will look to God and say, okay, God, how can you use us? But even if you're not a believer in a higher power, you can still make a difference and say, how am I going to make this world a better place? The only thing that we can do to repay the good deeds that others have done to get us in places where we are in our lives is to pay it forward and to be a blessing to someone else. So I think the family motto for my household is be blessed and be a blessing, because that's ultimately what we're here to do, and to be a blessing to others and to share, share these stories and be a part of the positive change. So, Elder Parker, I'll leave it to you to see any parting comments before we wrap up here.
I just like to encourage, and I have always done this, when you have the opportunity to do good to all men and have the power, because in America, to be a friend of a black man is a negative. That's the worst thing can almost happen to a guy. A lot of presidents has ran on the race card, crime, and sometimes they said, we're going to make America great again. Hey, what do you mean by that? and they have certain things in mind, you know.
Yeah.
Have the courage and the fire and the belly to stand up for what's right. So I had a student tell me once, he said, I'm going to stand up for what's right. I said, you're not going to be like if you speak well. You can't be too friendly toward black men without being criticized or ostracized. It's not a good thing in America.
Mm-hmm.
So have the courage and the fire and your ability to stand up for what's right. Be a man, because you got to live with yourself when it's all said and done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, like I said, I'll let you have the last words on that. thank you so much for your time here during this podcast. And thank you for your time here at Macaulay School today. I know that we have a busy day ahead, and your story will continue to be a blessing and for all of us. So thank you very much.
My pleasure.
This is Lee Burns, head of school. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast with a true American hero, Wheeler Parker, who since the killing of his cousin Emmett Till in 1955, has dedicated his life to service to his God and to the betterment of mankind. It was a joy to have Elder Parker on campus and a joy to share this podcast with you. Thank you for listening, and as always, go Big Blue.